Welcome to the Masks Off for People Pleasers and Perfectionists podcast. I am Kim Gross, your host, and it is my mission to help you unmask from people pleasing and perfectionistic behaviors so that you can finally have the confidence to live the life that you truly desire. Let's tune in to this week's episode. I will begin with the quote, as I normally do, and this quote was provided by Dr. Anna Redman herself, and the quote is this: I'd rather give people a life that is bigger than their pain than fix their pain. And I really want to deconstruct that quote in a moment, but let's first start with you telling us a little bit about yourself.
Okay, thanks for asking. I am a trained and licensed clinical psychologist. I have a specialty in chronic pain and a board certification in biofeedback. And most of my career was spent working in different clinical environments on pain management teams in different types of settings. And that means that I've spent over a decade listening to women who have chronic pain. And during those experiences, I really found that they just were not getting the education that they needed to feel better. So now I have an online business where I connect with women with education that I think is missing from their conventional treatment appointments. And I specifically focus on high achieving women to conquer chronic pain so they can get back this sustained productivity without being controlled by flare ups and reconnect with what brings them joy and vitality.
And also there's a connect for people with chronic pain and perfectionism, because that's what I talk about is perfectionism, which is why I felt we were such a good connect for this particular episode. But before we go further into all of that and what you do, I want to go back to your quote for a minute. So I would rather give people a life that is bigger than their pain than fix their pain. So two things. Let's talk more about what that means to have a life bigger than their pain, or maybe even take it a step further, is how can people live and not be identified by their pain? Do you know what I mean?
I do. And I think this came to me because of years of listening to women with chronic pain, describing all of the things that they've done and tried, all the medications, procedures, injections, surgeries, all the fixes that didn't fix their pain. And I have a background of being really integrated in the work that I do. So I did it with other professionals. We taught things together. We learned things together. It was very integrated because I think the sum of what we could do was better than what we could do alone. And when we would, instead of fixing, or even instead of taking the pain level from a 10 to a whatever, we shifted the focus to values. So when we found that when people could connect to the things that they value, they connect those values to their movements, how they schedule their day, how they pace their day, what they fill their day with, they started talking about their pain less. They started thinking about it less. Their life got bigger and their pain got smaller. And that looks different for different people, right? Some people will say, I just didn't have pain anymore. Some people would say, I forget about it more because my life is filling up and I'm doing the things that I love. So that looks different for everybody. But I found that if we take the approach of not trying to fix, but rather to reconnect people with what's important to them, that has a much bigger impact, I think. And I think the fact that chronic pain is increasing in the world speaks to that as well, because we're still taking that medical approach, neglecting other things.
Yes, I love what you're saying. And I think that I even saw a post that you had on Instagram. I think that's where it was. Or I heard you say something along the lines of, when you have pain, some type of chronic pain, which I do, I have an autoimmune disease and I have chronic pain, but that doesn't, this is what I remember you saying, it doesn't mean that because you have the pain, that you are causing more damage to your body if you go and do some type of activity. Do you recall that post that I'm referring to or something along those lines?
I say it all the time. Yeah.
Okay. So you know exactly what I'm saying. And I loved that you shared that because I also play tennis. And every time I play tennis, I feel pain worse in my back and mostly my back, but sometimes my knees. Now, could I be doing damage? Possibly. I don't know. But at the same time, what I do know is that if I have the mindset that I am doing damage to my body and I'm thinking only about the pain, then I'm most likely going to, and I've come close to saying that I need to give up playing tennis, thus making my world smaller.
Which is a totally reasonable reaction, by the way.
It's yes.
Not an expect that this might happen.
Exactly. And not only that, but also the genetic component, right? My dad played tennis. My dad had chronic pain. He had to have all kinds of back surgeries and so on and so forth. And I watched myself tell myself that because my dad had the back pain and he played tennis and he could no longer play tennis, he stopped playing tennis because of his pain. That means I'm going to have to stop playing tennis because I'm like my dad and I have the same pain. And just by having that mindset, then the outcome might very well be that I end up giving up tennis. But when I listened to you share that, I thought to myself, that's interesting. I don't know for sure that coming out here and playing tennis is causing me damage to my back. It hurts while I play and it hurts for a little while after, but then it subsides. And I do a lot of things that my dad never did. I stretch, I go to acupuncture, I take care of myself a lot more than my dad did. So my experience doesn't have to be his. Thus, I'm not allowing my world to get smaller. Mm-hmm. So is that what you're referencing in terms of that quote?
Yeah. And there's so much to say with what you, in response to what you just said. And when you bring up your dad, that the context, our background, our environment, the phrases and language and images we grew up with can affect how we think about pain. And that's not to say that it's only mindset, right? Or only your environment. It's always biological, psychological, and context or social. And I think, you know, it's just not all mindset. And I think that when people assume that that must mean the pain is in my head, like you can have an actual autoimmune disorder, or you can have no diagnosis at all, or no clear place where the pain came from. And either one of these things, like your autoimmune issue, can be amplified by pain signals. So that pain we feel when we're playing tennis or doing whatever, that is our brain protecting with pain. And we have to remember that some people, their bodies are more sensitive. Their brain is hyperprotective. It's overprotective. It's protecting when it doesn't need to. And it does that by creating pain. I guess the disclaimer is that I'm not a physician and I'm not ruling out the red flags of everyone listening. And I don't know for sure if it's not damage, right? But generally with chronic pain, the nervous system is involved if you've had it for more than 6 months and it can keep pain going. It can be overprotective. Hurt and pain doesn't necessarily mean harm or damage.
Okay. Yeah. So let's talk about that part a little bit more, the nervous system, because I do feel like that in part is a part of it for me. Mm-hmm. And it may be very well linked to the autoimmune disease. It probably is, because with the Sjogren's, I have had a lot of autonomic neuropathy, the autonomic nervous system involved in it. And that is the nervous system. And also just being a chronic people pleaser and perfectionist has allowed me to have a dysregulated nervous system for many years. So I'm learning how to bring all this online and so that I can regulate my nervous system more. And then maybe you can speak to this. So then maybe as one does that, the brain doesn't feel the need to have to protect as much. Am I understanding that piece of it correctly?
Right. So we, Adrienne Lowe, Lorimer Mosley, there are researchers that have talked about this, where we want to increase the credible evidence of safety to our brain, and reduce credible evidence of danger to our brain, because our brain is really just trying to like make a best guess response at what it's supposed to do. And it's taking in information from the receptors that are distributed all over our body, our experiences, our thoughts, like all of these things, our memories. It all impacts how our brain decides to respond in any particular moment. And sometimes that response, that threat system, that alarm system can just become too sensitive. It's like
a stuck. Like it's almost stuck.
Stuck there. It's like a car alarm. My husband's car does this. I'll be driving his car and it's just like, right, like this really loud sound. And I have no idea why it's going off. And I told him about it. He said, says you're getting too close. That means you're getting too close to a car and it thinks you're going to hit something. Mm. Like, but I'm nowhere near a car. So this car is too sensitive. It's overprotecting me. And in yes. that way, it's just not helpful.
Great analogy. So let's talk and break down a little bit more about the people that are listening that may be struggling with people pleasing and or perfectionistic tendencies. Especially, you talk a lot about that high overachiever and how all of that connects to chronic pain.
Yes. What I see most often with women in pain, and this is, I would say, generally what I see most often with women in pain, but also due to tendencies of perfectionism and people pleasing, is the cycle of overactivity. And so this is where we push through in the name of getting something done, because whatever reason it is, it could be our worth is tied to what we do, or we're trying to maintain a certain image of what we can handle, or we don't want to disappoint someone, or we have these inner expectations of what we should be doing, and they're really high. And the pillars of overactivity are, you start off with a good day, pain is low, energy is high, you're motivated, you get swept away, you're gonna squeeze everything in you haven't been able to do for so long. And then you push through, you cross the line, you don't listen to your body for all of the reasons I said before, and you overdo it to the point of a flare up. And then that's unhelpful, because you're in a flare up. You're sending danger messages to your brain, is associating all of those things you did with not good. And it just sends the wrong message, unsafe, to your brain. And then your brain gets practiced at associating movement and activity with pain. And I've done this. I've talked to many women who've done this. It's the cycle of overactivity is actually really common, especially for people who were used to a high level of performance or productivity or high achievement before they had chronic pain. And whether it's overactivity or even underactivity, because plenty of people are scared to move, extremes are what drives chronic pain to keep going in a lot of ways.
So I love what you're saying, because that literally just happened to me these last few days. So I was feeling really good. And I, for about 2-3 weeks, got into a place of doing, being very productive. I've had all these projects going on and just continuing to sit at the computer and just, oh, I can get one more thing done, and just, one more task. Let me look at my list. One more thing. And I just kept pushing through. And I think I didn't even really notice at first when I started to feel more fatigue and I started to feel the pain, I was not even aware. Then I became aware that I'm starting to get more tired by the end of the night. I was like exhausted. And by the way, this is something that I watched my mom do when I was a young girl, where she would go to work and work all day long, go and do things for people, take care of people. And then after dinner, she would sit down on the couch with a bag of chips in front of the TV and then not move until she went to bed. She was just utterly exhausted from just pouring out everything, not filling her cup. And so I started to notice, like, in the last couple of days that I was getting, I was even over the weekend, I pushed, I just wanted to get things done. I had a list of things to do. I wanted to be productive. And lo and behold, today is Tuesday. Lo and behold, on Sunday, I started to have a flare up because I just kept pushing through. And I've had this autoimmune disease for 18 years now, and I'm pretty good at times at navigating it all. Like, I would have this visual of a traffic light. Green means I am feeling good, I can go. Yellow means I need to slow down, I need to pace more. And then red is I hit a wall, I've already crashed. I didn't even. So sometimes you just go right through yellow, just go right through from green right to red, and it's too late. So I guess I would ask you, for the listeners who are listening, who might be identifying with overachiever perfectionism, this pushing internal pressure system that doesn't allow you to rest. You're just always going like the Energizer bunny, mm-hmm. and you have chronic pain. So I guess one is, how can they recognize or be more aware in the beginning before they get to that red light of crashing and hitting a wall? Let's start there. How can they recognize?
Yeah, I think that's a good place to start, because the first step would be just awareness.
Yep.
And how to become aware that we have these tendencies. And I think getting practiced at paying attention to what is driving your plan for the day, or what is driving your task that you're doing in that moment. Is it something you really value? Is it wanting to complete X, Y, and Z by the end of the day? What is the driving factor? Mm-hmm. And some people, I think, need a little bit more help than others to build some insight into this, but practicing that is really important.
Yeah, I think that's an important part, because sometimes I have to really check in with myself more than once, that am I doing this because my perfectionistic tendency is creeping up and I just have to be perfect at getting all the things done right away, and I'm just doing it to check off my boxes, because by the end of the day, if my list is complete, there's a sense of what, worth or validation, because I completed my checklist. Or if it's coming from a value place, like I really love, like I just said to you before we started, I said, you are my fourth podcast of the day. And my energy has gone up throughout the day because I love connecting. I love having these conversations, and I value that. I value connection. And so therefore, my energy is good versus if I was doing something else. So that is truly an important point to make. So being aware, number one, what is the driving force behind you pushing through or overdoing or overachieving? And then what would you say? What else would you have to offer?
And to help build awareness, I think it's easier to think about these things ahead of the moment rather than in the moment. So let's say I'm really into helping people redesign their days and their weeks. So if you're thinking ahead about your week and you're basing those decisions on your values, you've got a good plan moving in. But if in the moment, it's harder to know what's driving it. If you're making decisions moment by moment, it's easier to fall into that push crash cycle. And it's harder to understand what it is that's driving it. But I think the things that are really helpful to do, if you do build some awareness of that and you notice that you have these tendencies, the first thing would be to try to practice being okay with 80%. This is super hard. But it's like exposure training, right? To be okay with 80% good.
That's so hard. That's really hard.
It's super hard. So that, this is such a dumb example, but this happened to me the other day. My daughters, every Friday, they have a family Friday, and you get to walk in with your kid, and there's a whole little assembly, and afterwards there's coffee with the principal. But I didn't have time to stay for both. And I felt all of this guilt, like I should be doing all of it. I should be staying. And I was like, you know what? I'm going to be okay with showing up today and doing part of it. And it's just, it sounds so silly, but it's a practice at breaking that pattern. I think the second thing to think about too is that if we have perfectionism and people pleasing driving what we do, there's a lot of chronic stress on our bodies that comes with that. So we can find ourselves in a fight or flight response all the time, chronically. Maybe we don't even have awareness of how much tension we're holding or how much we're holding our breath as we go through our day. So incorporating strategies to help tone down the nervous system, the level of stress, the nervous system's response to stress, just introducing safety throughout the day. I had one more thing that the other thing I wanted to say was there are going to be days that we can't pace, that we just have to push through. And I just think about this one person I talked to a long time ago, and she just wanted to go to Disney World with her grandchild, but there's no way she could get through a whole day of Disney, right? It would totally flare up her pain. And maybe it's just a day where you have a bunch of deadlines. It could be anything, but sometimes we have those days and we have to push through, and you can't pace every day. I think that if we're pacing 29 days of a month and we have one day that we cannot pace, our body becomes less sensitive because we're pacing every other day. We've got more safety messages sent to our brain because we have more experiences, positive experiences with things that we're doing because we're pacing it, and our brain doesn't get sent danger messages. And because our body is less sensitive, when we go into this day that we can't pace the way we want, maybe we do a little, but we have to push through, we're not going into that with as sensitive of a body, as disrupted of a mindset or emotional state. We're in a much better place, and maybe you'll still flare up, but maybe it won't be as long. Maybe it won't happen at all. Maybe you'll just have pain for a few hours at the end of the day. So I think it's important to recognize, like, we cannot pace every day. That's not realistic. But if we can pace a lot of the time, we're recalibrating the nervous system a little bit.
I love what you're saying there. And just as you even talk about pacing, I already feel my body relaxing, like I'm consciously trying to rest my body. So can you describe a little bit more, or maybe give even an example of what it means to pace throughout a day? What does pacing look like?
So pacing is two things. There's time-based pacing, and I'm specifying that as the opposite of pain-based pacing or finishing something-based pacing. So okay. We are setting goals of how long we think we can do something without experiencing a flare-up afterward. And we start there, we alternate rest and activity, and we do that for a few days, and then we increase it. And you can build from that. It sounds a bit tedious, and I think it probably feels that way, but you can build from that. You cannot build from a flare-up, right? So you can build from pacing, and it's a much effect. It's you're working smarter rather than harder. It's a better way to get to your goals than pushing and crashing and pushing and crashing. The other thing I'll say about pacing and alternating rest and activity is that rest doesn't have to be sleep, and it doesn't have to be lying down watching Netflix, though that may be preferable sometimes. It's alternating different types of activities. So we have activities that require us to be physical, but we also have activities that require our mental. You know, they're mental activities, like I need to pay my bills or check my emails or call my mom or whatever the thing is. These are mental activities. And then we have recovery activities. So things that fill us back up. So that looks different for everyone. Like for you, maybe that's talking to four podcast guests in a row. And for someone else, it might be going out for a walk in nature. Or for someone else, it might be sitting at their favorite place in their home, reading a book or knitting a scarf. So we have to alternate physical, mental, and recovery activities throughout the day.
Yeah. And for me, I do a lot of mental and sitting. So I have to, after every task, I have to get up and then go move, because then the sitting too long is what can end up being creating my flare up for me. So it's all right, I'll have this podcast, then it's okay, maybe go outside and get the mail even, or just get up and go put clothes in the laundry or whatever the case is. So for me, that's alternating those activities as well. So I think what I'm curious to know about is, you talked, let's go back to that quote again in the beginning. I'd rather give people a life that is bigger than their pain than to fix their pain. Mm-hmm. I'm curious, can the pain, chronic pain, ever be fixed or go away?
Absolutely. I believe chronic pain can go away. And mm-hmm. I think there is a lot of science out there now and treatments that tell us it can go away. And these treatments are not limited to a medical approach. These treatments are holistic, they're biopsychosocial, but they are helping people recover from pain. I do think that recovery looks different for everybody. So when I encourage people to think about this, like, how will you know that something worked? And I'm saying the word worked in quotations.
Yeah.
Because worked, does that mean like you're sleeping better, you're seeing the people you love more, you're back to playing pickleball? Worked might be different for everyone. And I encourage people to think of how to know if it works in a way that's different than just that 0 to 10 pain scale. And I think finding recovery, whatever that is for you, and I think people probably know it when they get there, I think that might be a steeper hill for some people to climb. If context impacts our pain, our psychology impacts our pain, our biological factors impact our pain, there are parts of that that can make that hill a little bit steeper for people to climb, but not impossible.
Can you say a little bit more about that? Can you expand on that? Why it would be steeper?
Yeah. So when I think about environment, I'm a good example of this. Like, the pain that I had that started my chronic pain occurred in a highly stressful, highly toxic work environment. And no matter what I did, I stayed really stuck in this place of pain while I was there. And so, of course, we can't always leave our work environments, or it's really hard to leave these highly stressful environments, or it's just the one we are in. So that can impact how hard it is to pull out of pain. I have spoken with a lot of women who have pretty complex PTSD, and there's a lot of really hard work that goes into recovering from that. And for many of them, they might feel like they continue to have pain as they're working through that. But I just like to think that, and I've probably said this in your Facebook group, I feel like I say it everywhere, if we take small steps in a forward direction, in the direction of our values, hopefully in a paced way, hopefully driven by values and not by perfectionism, maybe some days that will be a big leap. Maybe some days it'll just be a small step. But if we look back like 10 years ago, like if I look back 10 years ago, wow, I've made so much progress. So whether you've recovered or not, you can look back and see so much progress has been made.
So you might not end up being 100% pain-free, but if you work at the tools that you just described and you're in a recovery program and you look back at the yardstick behind you, you can see the amount of growth or change that took place.
Yeah. And
of course, it may not be where you want to be either. You might want the pain free.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think people can have no pain at all. That can happen. But I think there's a lot of confusion about that in the way we talk about pain. Like, people are expecting that there's something out there that will get rid of pain overnight. And that's just not how brain retraining works. That's not how true changing of your nervous system works, especially if you've had years and years of chronic pain. I was speaking with this woman the other day who's, oh, I've just been working so hard and I just still have pain. And we talked through it a little bit. And she used to be in just one continuous flare up after another. And now they happen less often. They don't last as long. She's doing more. So is she in recovery, quote unquote? I don't know. But she's in the process of recovering from her pain. And I think that's really hard work.
It is. Can you say a little bit more about that brain retraining that you just said? And retrain, I think you said also the retraining, recalibrating the nervous system. I know we talked about it a little bit, but can you add a little more on that?
Sure. If we just think of pain as this alarm system and the brain's job is to protect us, that's its job. Mm. That's the thing that it does. It's very busy doing that. Sometimes it can become overprotective, like that car alarm example that I said before. And when it becomes overprotective or when we've had pain for longer than 6 months, regardless of the diagnosis, whether it's autoimmune or fibromyalgia or an injury at work, if pain goes on for that long, for more than 6 months, the nervous system is starting to get more and more involved. The brain's becoming more protective. It's creating pain more often. And most of the time, I think what's driving that is threat. So threat can come from our doctor appointment, our MRI that we're looking at, the pain that we had when we tried to play tennis. Threat can, and our thoughts about that, threat can come from all these different places. So to retrain and retrain the brain to be less protective and to recalibrate the nervous system to respond differently to pain and stress, we have to get the right education. And oftentimes that's not happening in our conventional medical appointments.
Definitely not.
I do think there are a lot of clinicians out there trying to put the information out there so people can access it, but I don't think it shows up easily. So getting education about the neuroscience of pain and understanding and neutralizing pain, that pain is actually just this protective response from your brain. And we just need to understand why it's doing that and send more safety messages and understand how you and your unique life can do that for your brain. And the second step is those nervous system resetting type of activities, things like relaxation strategies, diaphragmatic breathing. So things that literally and actually can turn off the fight or flight response if you use them enough. And then the other things are like the things that we do, right? So are the things we're doing, are we overdoing it? Are we pushing through? Are we giving our brain positive associations with movement? Or are we continuing to provide danger, the idea that there's something threatening or dangerous? So it's the people we see. It's the things that we do. It's the places we go. It's the way that we think. Like all of these things, through education and experience and trying, a willingness to try a new way, can help retrain the brain to not feel like it has to protect you so much with that pain.
I love that. And then lastly, I think I heard you say something. Do you biofeedback? Do you do biofeedback?
Oh, I'm not actively doing it now. I'm board certified in it. But okay. It was very much a part of my training and my clinical work. And for your listeners who don't know what that is, it's
yes, where you tell us.
Okay. It's you connect someone, put electrodes on their bodies, which measures the things that happen in our body when we're having a stress response, like a fight or flight response. So they measure things like your muscle tension, your breathing, how warm or cold your fingertips are, which is telling us, is your blood flowing freely or is it more constricted? Constricted happens when we're stressed. How sweaty are our palms? And it tracks that and then it feeds it to a monitor so we can see in real time what your body's doing at the moment in response to a stressor or in response to maybe some relaxation strategy or an attempt to change that physiological response here. And so I would work with people to show them what you can do to reduce this or that on the screen, and they would try it and they would see real time on the screen that it was helping them. And then they would go home and keep practicing.
Any last words of wisdom, anything that we missed that you feel would be really pertinent to the listeners?
I guess the one thing I would say to drive home, especially if people were multitasking, just to come back to this idea that often what's driving our pain that just won't go away is threat. Mm-hmm. And it's trying to figure out where that threat is coming from and introducing more safety messages to the body, to the brain.
I love that. And where can people find you? I know, but tell us.
And I love that. So I'm pretty active on Instagram and Facebook. Instagram, I'm Dr. Dr. Anna Redmond. On Facebook, I have a free group. It's called Breaking Through Pain. I think it's called Breaking Through Pain, an Oasis for High Achieving Women.
Yeah.
I do all kinds of live trainings in there every week. I have free guides. And then I have, of course, a more comprehensive 3-month program.
Excellent. And I just want to say to you and to the listeners that in your Facebook group that you offer an amazing amount of value for free. So anyone out there that is listening to this episode and can relate and wants to know more, highly recommend that you join the group, because I can't believe you really do give a great amount of information and education, and it's a free group. So for people to utilize that for sure.
Thanks. You're so kind. That's my mission, is just to get it out there. And of course, if people want more personalized guidance, I can offer that too.
Awesome. Thank you so much for being a guest today. I gained so much from this conversation.
It's so easy to talk about it with you. I really appreciate your time.
No worries. So thank you everybody for tuning into another episode of Masks Off for People Pleasers and Perfectionists. And again, if you enjoyed this conversation, we talked so much about like chronic pain, but it really, again, we were trying to highlight and intersect for the people pleaser and the perfectionist as well. So if you enjoyed this conversation, give us a like or a thumbs up, and I will see you next time.